Well, it's a real pleasure to have my friend Randy Alcorn back with us. He's the author of a library full of books on Christian living and the founder and director of Eternal Perspective Ministries. Randy, a joy to have you back with us.
Always a pleasure, Rob.
Randy, for the last few weeks, we've been telling folks about our new study, Rich Toward God, which, of course, is based on the parable of the rich fool in Luke 12. And I'd love to get your thoughts on this passage. And I'll start by asking, from the end of that passage of Scripture, what does it mean to be rich toward God, in your view?
Well, I think to be rich toward God involves several things simultaneously. One is that God is the source of our true riches, our spiritual riches in Christ, yeah. But he's also the object of our riches. We should evaluate true wealth by what it means in terms of our relationship with him. Practically speaking, I think it means in this context in Luke 12, which is very close to the context of Matthew 6 about storing up treasures in heaven. In fact, he mentions that later on in Luke 12. But I think what it comes down to is just to give lavishly, to give sacrificially. To be rich toward God is to not hoard, not to spend everything on ourselves without regard to others. That's what the rich man, the rich fool in the parable did. And God accepts our gifts to the needy as if they were given directly to him. This is this incredible passage in Proverbs 19:17 that I think we do not ponder enough. Whoever is generous to the poor lends to the Lord, and he will repay him for his deed. Now, think of that lending to God. God doesn't need to borrow from anybody, so right. This is not about his need. This is about our need and our opportunity for eternal reward. When we're generous to the poor, God says, I'm going to pay you back. Now, if we came up with that idea, that would be blasphemous. God should never have to pay us back for anything. I mean, it's completely a reversal of what we would think, but that's the nature of eternal rewards. I'm going to honor you and I'm going to reward you. I'm going to repay you for your deed of being generous to the poor. Wow. Mm.
Yeah, that's powerful. And Randy, I want to go back to something you said a moment ago, because you said God is the source. I mean, he is our provider, but he's also the object of our value. It's this idea that being rich toward God causes us to count God as greater riches than anything in this world, right?
Absolutely. And you think about this, he is the source of all of our wealth, but it's more than that. He is our wealth. I mean, it all comes from him, and there's the primary and there's the secondary. The primary is God himself. And sometimes we focus so much on the secondary that we fail to trace it back to the primary. Because yes, he provides us with maybe a wonderful marriage, a wonderful family, a wonderful business, whatever good blessings that God has given us in our life. It might be our church, you know, whatever, our neighbors. But he's the source of that. It comes from him. So those secondary blessings are from his hand, and he is the primary. He's the source.
That is so powerful. What if we were to handle God's resources, because it all belongs to him, in such a way that it was evident to the world that God was our ultimate treasure? We started today by talking about the parable of the rich fool and what it means to live rich toward God. Let's dial into that word fool, Randy. This man in the parable is, of course, described as a fool. In this context, what does it mean to be a fool?
A fool is someone who is ignorant of the things of God or ignores the things of God, who makes choices based on his own kind of desires and intuitive, this is right, but it's really not this is right, it's this is what I want to do. A fool is the person who does what he wants to do all the time. And that to me is utter foolishness. And the thing that's interesting about this is that God calls upon us to do things because they are right. But that's not the only reason. He also calls upon us to do the right things because they are the smart things. They are the things that will pay off in life. So the fool is missing it on two levels. One is he's doing the wrong thing. But the wrong thing is also the stupid thing. It's the foolish thing. That's why he's a fool. And so the interesting thing is that to do the right thing is always in our best interest. So when it comes to materialism, when it comes to storing up things in the barn and eat, drink, and be merry, and, you know, I've accomplished all this, and here it is, it's not just that it's the wrong thing to do. It's the foolish thing to do because God's going to take it away from you. I mean, you're going to die, or before you die, perhaps it'll all be taken away from you. But one thing is certain, you're not going to have an eternal relationship with your possessions in this life. I mean, that's just obviously true, but it's not obvious to the fool. And so what God is calling upon us to do is to direct those treasures toward God and to invest in the lives of other people and to do with those things what will count and last for eternity, so that we will not only be righteous, but in being righteous, we will be wise.
Yeah, that's so good. You know, I was thinking about this, you know, when we think about this fool, Randy, you know, this rich man in the parable, he's saying, you know, his security comes without considering God. He's using his wealth to provide for his own security, leisure, and identity without acknowledging any need for God and his grace. You know, when I look at this passage, I'm reading right from Luke verse 19. He says, "And I will say to myself, you have many goods stored up for yourself for many years." And he just keeps saying, "I and me, this is what I will do. I will tear down my barns." And it's just clear that he's not acknowledging God for any of this, right?
Right. I mean, he's acknowledging his own wisdom, skill, or maybe Mother Nature that provided these things, but it's just not about God. And when you don't see God as the source, then that's where everything goes wrong. And that's why any time at any conference related to money, giving, finances, if it's from a Christian perspective, something's got to be said about God owns it all. You know, the earth is the Lord's and everything in it, the world and all who live in it. That's Psalm 24:1. Haggai 2:8, the silver is mine and the gold is mine, declares the Lord Almighty. I mean, he just makes emphatically clear that it all belongs to him. And I actually was speaking at a conference one time where somebody said to me, "I hope you guys aren't going to say that thing about how God owns it all." And, and I said, "Well, why?" "Because we all know it." And I said, "Well, we've all heard it, but that doesn't mean that we know it in the sense of we own it and we're living that way." And I felt like the very fact that he didn't want to hear it said suggested that he doesn't really believe it, or maybe he believes it in theory, but does not live like it's true.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. Well, to take this one step further, let's talk about materialism, which, of course, is a huge problem, especially here in the West. And in a sense, Randy, we're the victims of our own financial success. What is the real danger with materialism?
Well, materialism is the love of money and things. And the problem with money and things is, or one problem with them, is the more of them we accumulate, the more mass they have in our lives, the more they become our center of gravity. So then we orbit around them. And God calls upon us to orbit around him. The only thing that can break the back of the hold of materialism really is giving. We have to part with our stuff in order to be freed from the hold of our stuff. And the great thing is that God has built the world in such a way that when we part with it, not only does it honor God and benefit him in that sense, but it benefits other people who need what we in our abundance can help provide. And it's also in our best interest because it frees us from the bondage of materialism.
Yeah, that's well said. And let's dig into that a bit more, because you're headed where we want to go, and that is the antidote to money having a grip on us. What does the good life look like for us as believers, and how do we find it?
Well, I think the good life is interesting. I had a conversation with someone a few years ago, and they were telling me how their life was miserable. Okay, so, and think about what the word miserable comes from. That's the word they used. It comes, it's related to, at least, the word miser. Okay, so a miser is one who holds on to everything, and a miser is miserable. He is miserable. Right. That's the nature of it. So you would think, okay, he's doing this so he can be happy. He's being selfish so he can be happy, so he can live the good life. Well, this particular man went through a litany of things that had happened with him that were just awful things. And he had been sexually immoral. This had happened. And he lost his marriage. He lost his children, or at least the respect of his children. So many things he lost. He brought shame to the name of Christ, to his church, all of that. And then he said, and this is, I'm going to say, we were on the phone. So, you know, when I say he did it with a straight face, what I mean is it sounded like he was doing it with a straight face when he said, and so I was living a good life. And as a result, all these things happened. And even as he said those words, I was living the good life. I thought, what an irony. I don't think he was doing air quotes when he said, I was living the good life. Yeah. We're so used to thinking of that as the good life that even when it ruins us,
yeah,
we're calling it the good life, but it's not.
Yeah. Wow. So good. Randy, we're going to have you back. We've just scratched the surface, but profound thoughts and ideas about what the good life really is. We appreciate you stopping by today.
Hey, great to be with you, Rob.